Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hi, Ari. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
Okay. You sound good. Does my sound sound okay?
It is. It does.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So I fixed the webcast so that they're just going to have a button that they can press to listen.
Okay.
So hopefully they'll figure that out.
Right. Good deal.
A lot of times people will just come on the phone and we'll listen via phone and we'll make sure that it's set so everybody's muted so we don't get background noise from anybody or anything.
Right, right. Cool. I know, that can be pretty bad sometimes.
I think I'm going to put you on mute for a second and put my dog in the basement just in case she barks. Hang on. Actually, what's more likely is that she'll snore so loud that we'll be able to hear her on the recording.
Nice. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you get my updated...
I did. I sent you a note back, but I don't think you saw it. So we've got some folks that are starting to join us. We'll get started in just a few minutes. So thanks for being on the webcast, and there's instructions if you want to join us on the phone as well. There's a Q&A box at the bottom, just, you know, throughout the process. Just if you're out there listening to us, go ahead and type in your name and say hi so we know you're there, and we'll get started in just a few minutes. I started to try to find a video of this song, Let's Talk About Sex, Ari. And I was like, I don't know if I can use somebody else. I can't, you know, it's like I'm such a rule follower, right? So it's like,
right.
I'm like, I couldn't borrow the video without, I don't want to get in trouble using their music. So we might just need to sing it together or something as we get started here so that people can be inspired.
Sort of thinking about it. It's sort of like, you know, that old joke that, you know, those with attention deficit tend to marry those with attention excess. So it's kind of like,
yes.
You know, you and Elaine, the business marriage is,
yes.
You know, you're a good complement to each other.
It's true. It's true. It's definitely a balance. There's moments when my rule following gets in the way, and there's moments when it's really important. So,
right.
But anyway, so for those of you who are still joining us, we're going to get started in just a minute. If you're on the webcast, there's a place to type in questions. We'd love to have you go ahead and type in and say hi. A couple of you are already saying, hi, I'm here, and give us your email address and let us know you're joining us live. And that's the place that we'll be asking the all too important questions about sex and ADHD, because that's the topic today. And we'll just get started in just another 2 minutes here, I think. Everybody's being shy. So again, if you're on the webcast, let us know that you're there, and type in the Q&A box and let us know you're there.
Now, should I be on the? I have to admit, I don't have the website up. Is there some benefit to having it up?
Nope. It's just got a pretty picture of you. It's got your bio. It's got the little button that they press to listen, and then where the questions are. But I'll take the questions. I'm in the little panel thing that tells us all the questions, and if people ask them, I will pass them on. So I'm going to call it 12:03. I'm going to honor people's time who are here on time, and we're going to get going here. And so I'm going to hit the recording, Ari, and then we'll get started.
Okay.
Hi, it's Diane Dempster, and I'm here on February 25th, 2016, and I'm excited to be talking about sex today, Sex Baby, with Ari Tuchman. And Ari's here, and I love this. Ari, before I knew that you did this cool survey talking to families with ADHD about sex, I didn't know that this was, like, something of interest for you. But I used to be a sexuality educator. I don't know if you know that about
what?
Me.
No way.
I was. Yeah, in a previous life. Elaine and I both were. And so it's really
what?
Kind of cool. That
no wonder you're both so fun and cool.
Thank you. But so I'm excited to have this conversation today. You know, tell us a little bit about how you got started on this particular topic and a little bit about your business as you get started. But you're just such a great resource for us in a lot of different levels. But this is such an important conversation to be having as couples. You know, we've got all kinds of mixtures of couples and single parents in our community. But, you know, we always talk about the fact that ADHD impacts every aspect of your life, and it's not surprising that sex is one of them. So it's a great conversation to have. So why don't you get us started a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, I see a lot of folks with ADHD. It's really the bulk of my practice. So that's kids, it's teens, it's adults. And of course, you know, when you're seeing kids with ADHD, you're probably seeing, well, you're definitely seeing the parents as well. And probably one of them has ADHD also. So, you know, it really becomes a bit of a sort of family affair. But you know, I've been interested in sex and how it affects couples, you know, in both the really great ways and also in those problematic negative ways for a long time, but I sort of have begun to put them together more in these last years here. And the idea is that, you know, we all know that couples where one person has ADHD, one member of the couple, or couples where one of the kids has ADHD, that they have more than enough things to struggle with. They've got some extra things to struggle with during the day. When everybody's got their clothes on, they have those extra struggles. So at worst, we don't want them to also then be struggling at night when they take their clothes off, or if they're lucky during the day when they take their clothes off. So, but also at best, you know, that positive, good connection that comes from a fun sexual experience with your partner has such potentially beneficial protective factors for how the couple does with each other, which then spills out in terms of the family functioning overall. You know, that the better we're doing as parents, the more patience we have for our kids not making us so crazy, you know, that we can respond in more kind of thoughtful, mindful ways and not just angry, stressed out, reactive kinds of ways. So, you know, so for that reason, I've been kind of, you know, looking at sex and couple relationships and whatever. But then it sort of evolved, and I got kind of more and more into it to a point where I decided to put together a survey, because there's really nothing out there, hardly, on ADHD and sex and how it affects the couples. So I can speculate and make up all sorts of things, but I don't know, like, and nobody knows. So I put together this survey, and I have to say, I went sort of crazy with it, because there's like 50 questions in it, but when you look at the sub-questions, it actually becomes 70 questions. So I don't know what the hell I was thinking when I put 70 questions out there. Clearly, I was insane when I thought people would fill this out. But what's amazing is over 3,000 people filled it out. So the
it's
fact
amazing.
That yeah. So the fact that we could get over 3,000 people to fill this out, many of whom have ADHD and, you know, surveys and stuff is not exactly in the sweet spot of what they love to do, I think it speaks to the fact that people are really interested in this topic and they see the value in it.
No, absolutely. And the other thing that kind of came up for me as you were talking about it, Ari, is that, you know, it's almost like sex. A healthy sexual relationship ends up being self-care for parents. And And it probably, if I had to guess, you know, people might feel more comfortable doing that than going to the gym or meditating or something else. So it's important topic.
And sometimes, you know, it's sort of, I mean, my schedule is as busy as anybody's, so I can totally appreciate lack of time as being an impediment to self-care. But, you know, the nice thing about sex is that you don't need tons of time necessarily for it. I mean, it's great if you got, you know, an easy, lazy hour to spend, but you don't necessarily always need an hour. And, of course, anytime I use the word sex, I'm not only speaking sex in the strictest, like, intercourse definition. I'm talking any sort of erotic experience between two people or sometimes with one person. I'm talking about straight couples. I'm talking about gay couples and lesbians. I'm talking about married, you know, dating, engaged, whatever. So I'm kind of very inclusive. And frankly, if we're being even more inclusive, we're not even just talking to two people. It could be more than two people. So as long as it's consensual, as long as it's a good experience for everybody involved, I'm okay with it. But that, you know, as busy parents, we don't have that luxury always of, like, these long, drawn-out, you know, like, to go off to some, like, yoga retreat weekend or something. But, you know, sometimes rather short, you know, good sexual experiences can have such a positive effect on how we feel about our partner, how we feel about our life and our mood, and we sleep better, and just, I don't know, like, there's a lot of good things that come of it, and especially when you contrast it against the additional resentment and stress and not being on the same team that can happen when a couple is struggling sexually, and then in other ways also.
Ari, does it make sense to talk a little bit about the biology and just a reminder, I'm guessing for many people, but also something new for other folks, it's like biologically there's a lot of physical advantages to sexual contact, sexual expression, and how is that different or the same for someone with a executive function challenged brain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, sex is inherently rewarding. I mean, as long as it's a good experience, if you don't have a trauma history that can really kind of complicate it. But you know, sex is a positive, enjoyable thing, and a lot of dopamine gets fired off during sexual experiences. So, yeah, absolutely. It's rewarding. It's activating in that sense. I think for everybody, but I don't know. Like, I don't have any hard data on this, but I think maybe a little more so that, you know, if your dopamine already runs a little bit low in certain parts of the brain, then maybe that activating part of sexuality is kind of having some benefit there. I mean, not necessarily in a long, long enduring way, but certainly at the time and maybe for a little bit afterwards. You know, like there's some research out there about, you know, a good bout of exercise results in some better attention and focus and maybe even executive function stuff for, you know, some hours afterwards. Maybe the same could be said about sex. I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing on that, but I would love to see the research on it.
Well, maybe we need to add sex to the list of things you could do to activate the brain. We've been talking about that this week in Sanity School, so that might be a good one to throw in there.
There you go. So, yeah, and I think that, you know, the double-edged sword of sex is, you know, for busy couples, is that, unfortunately, sex sort of needs to be planned, or at least it's best when it is. And planned doesn't necessarily mean something like, you know, every Friday night, you know, we make a point of getting together, although I'm not opposed to that as an idea. But there needs to be some intentionality about it. And I think that when we just wait for sex to happen, it's like anything else. It just happens a lot less. It may not be that it never happens, but it doesn't happen as often because there's just other things that kind of fill in any of those empty spaces in our schedule or take up any of those last little bits of mental energy. So, you know, the couples who are more intentional about it tend to have more sex, that they make it more of a priority, And that means letting the other things go, because there's always other things. There's always more dishes to put in the dishwasher. There's always, you know, some other thing to check out online or whatever. So really kind of being intentional about it and kind of flirting in the lead up. So, like, there was this kind of big survey that was done, and the results are going to be published, like, you know, any day now. I've been kind of, you know, stalking the journal's website for this article to come out. Looked at, you know, couples who have happier sex lives tend to do more, like, sexting. And that doesn't necessarily mean, like, sending dirty pictures, although I'm not opposed to that, as long as you don't have a company cell phone. But just sending, like, you know, nice little thoughts through the day, thinking about you or looking forward to tonight or, you know, as racy as you want to get. It just kind of like it gets the juices flowing a little bit before you even get there, you know, which really kind of runs in contrast to this kind of mistaken notion that sex should just be spontaneous, that you should just be sort of like overcome with desire. You know, like in great movies, you know, there's great scenes where they're overcome with desire and they sweep the dishes off the table and they're like ripping clothes off. And like, there is no part of real life that that happens in.
No. Well, I guess the question is, with if you've got a partner or you are the partner with ADHD, is spontaneity harder? Is spontaneity easier? Is planning harder? I mean, I'm kind of curious about that aspect. If it's important, particularly with busy parents, it can be hard. What are your thoughts in terms of the differences there between the audiences?
You know, I think one of the ways of looking at this is that both partners bring a different strength to the table. So I think the non-ADHD partner is naturally in the better position to be the one to sort of plan it and to sort of push for it so that it happens. Whereas I think that the ADHD partner, you know, is more prone to, I think, seizing the moment. In the sense of like, okay, here we are, let's just go for it. This is important, let's do it. And those are, like, a good couple needs both of those skills. They don't have to reside within the same person, but a good couple needs both of those skills. That there are times where somebody needs to say, you know what, the kitchen's a mess, but screw it, who cares? Like, leave the kitchen, walk away, we need to spend some time together, this is important too. And then you also need the person who says, okay, let's plan for Tuesday night or let's plan for tonight, like this gets said in the morning, and then sort of runs the day in a way that allows tonight to happen. You know, so having time for sex at the end of the day partially means managing time well enough through the day that you're not forced to be doing things at night that then just squeezes the sex out.
Right, because, I mean, and it's a balance, and I imagine, I mean, it's so hard. There's so many couples that have a hard time with one partner or the other kind of being the natural one who tends to initiate physical intimacy or sexual intimacy. And so if that also happens to be the one that's not spontaneous, it changes the dynamic. And so I'm guessing that having that conversation about, well, which one of us is more spontaneous, which one of us tends to be the one that initiates and balancing that. Do you find that's a hard conversation for people to have, an easy conversation for people to have? What do you think gets in the way there?
I think it depends. I think if the couple is struggling and there's resentment, either on this topic or other topics, especially if there are other kind of like related topics, like I always do everything around here kind of stuff, I think then this gets swept into that negativity, you know, in that it's hard to take what your partner is saying at face value and to assume some positive intent or at least neutral intent, and instead to kind of get defensive or to kind of just bring in these other related topics, and then the conversation gets kind of messy and everybody gets stuck in the mud.
Let me say that bluntly. So you didn't help me clean the kitchen, and now you want me to spend 15 minutes or 20 minutes with you intimately in the bedroom?
Yep.
Come on, are you kidding me?
Exactly. That is exactly. And for what it's worth, I already had, I mean, it's only noon, and I already had that conversation with a client this morning.
Yeah, no.
You know, exactly that. So, yeah. But, you know, this is, I think this can be the way that having a good sexual connection benefits the couple and the individuals in other ways, in the sense of, I don't know, not to sound completely like, you know, mercenary about the whole thing, but, you know, if I'm hoping to have sex tonight, maybe I'm going to be a little more likely to kind of pitch in around things, you know, or to bring my wife a cup of coffee in the morning or whatever, you know. Now, obviously I need to be sort of slick enough that my wife doesn't get the feeling that, like, oh, you only do these things when you want to get laid, because obviously that's going to have a short half-life before, you know, it kind of blows up on me. But
right.
It's just, you know, it's that anticipation, hopefully then, brings out better behavior from both people, as well as then the afterglow afterwards, you know, those positive feelings afterwards then contribute. So I think the possibility or the having of a good sexual experience can benefit you both before it happens as well as afterwards. And then if you get enough of these happening, hopefully there's enough kind of like, if not overlap between the before and the after, at least not these great valleys in between them.
And the thing that's kind of coming up is, as you're saying that, Ari, is that cause and effect stuff, I've been told, and I don't have an ADHD brain, but I've been told that cause and effect stuff does not work the same way in the ADHD brain. And so there's going to be partners out there that aren't going to go, oh, my partner's going to know that I want to have a relationship, you know, some intimacy with them if I take the time earlier in the day to, you know, plant the seed and let them know I'm thinking about them and all this other stuff. And at the same time, the, you know, partner who's tending towards resentment might go, you know, you only ever do this for me when you want something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a conflict
right there.
How do you resolve that?
Yeah, and I think I think it's a great question. I think that you're pointing out an easy dynamic to fall into and a problematic dynamic to fall into, that nobody likes feeling used. You know, it's sort of like, great, I got to be the one who always cleans up the kitchen, and now you only butter me up when you want to have sex with me. You know, like, so that's when it goes, like, bad to worse.
Right.
So I think it's a matter of kind of just having some discussions about it so that everybody understands the other person's position. And, you know, a little friendly reminding is always going to be easier than doing it yourself, you know. So if the other person, you know, the person who tends to do more feels like, you know, is feeling resentful about always having to be the one to whatever, we keep coming back to cleaning the kitchen, but it could be 800 other options.
Yeah.
You know, that it's better than to say it, like, hey, can you take care of the kitchen? You know, and the way that I sort of express it is it needs to be said nicely and then it needs to be taken nicely. You know, so both people got their part to play in that. and it is true that folks with ADHD in the moment will have a harder time kind of connecting cause and effect. Now, hypothetically, they can do it very well, you know, and sometimes they do it very well. It's just they don't do it as well as – they don't do it well as often, as consistently as folks with that ADHD. But I think that this is a place where a little friendly reminding comes in, not in a enabling way, not in a codependent way, not in a everything is my responsibility, I'm the martyr here kind of way, but just in a – you know, I'm a big boy or I'm a big girl and I can use my words to ask for what I want. And, you know, if everyone can, so kind of the idea is keeping everybody on the same team. You know, I'm doing things for you, you're doing things for me. We can talk about things, we can bring things up, we can make requests, we can, you know, say no, we can decline requests. You know, can you clean up the kitchen for me? You know what, I have something else I need to do, or I just don't feel like it. Is there something else I could do, or can I get a free pass on this one? I'll do it the next time. As well as, you know, being able to decline sexual advances, you know, so that you should be able to ask, and you should be able to decline if you've been asked. But hopefully there's some kind of friendliness about it. And, you know, I'm sure you know this as well, you know, from your former work, but that sometimes when it comes to sex especially, even if we're not interested in the moment, sometimes once you start up things and you begin to kind of do some stuff, that sometimes desire follows activity. You know, usually the way we tend to do things is we desire to do something and then we do it. But sometimes you kind of got it like started a little bit to then get in the mood. And
the quote that comes up is fake it till you make it. And I quote a lot what I'm talking to, you know, parents who are trying to change their own behaviors or change their perspective. But I think it applies really well here. Sometimes you just kind of get caught up in it, and it's like all of a sudden, okay, I wasn't in the mood, but I'm willing to consider that I can come in the mood, and if I focus for about 5 minutes into the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to focus on the positive parts of it, you know, because it's easy to let our minds drift to the negatives, you know, in the sense of, oh, I have so many other things I need to do. Can I give myself the luxury of this time? Do I really feel like it with my partner because I'm still sort of frustrated about some other thing that happened earlier? Or, you know, their feet are really cold. Why are they touching me with them? Or that pressure is too hard, or it's too soft, or it's whatever. So, like, it's easy to get stuck on the negatives. But, you know, and this is kind of like a mindfulness thing or whatever, but, you know, or an attention regulation thing of instead choosing to put our attention on the positive. So, like, looking for the positive aspects of it. You know, what is it about this moment right now that I'm enjoying? What might I enjoy doing in a minute or in 20 minutes or whatever, like what are some sort of put that in a very intentional way to think about the positives of it or to put our attention on the positive, enjoyable sensations that we're experiencing at the moment.
You know, it's interesting because it takes me back to gratitude practice that is a really great one where it's like if every day you and your partner spent, you know, just 2 minutes or 1 minute saying, okay, I'm going to tell you three things every day that I love about you or that I admire about you or that I appreciate about you. And then you could use that as a way to, you know, when it's so easy to focus on the negatives and to become resentful and to get frustrated in certain situations. But if you can reiterate and focus on those things that you are appreciative of, oh, you know, my partner always brings me flowers on my birthday, and I always remember that they always, you know, take that time and they put the reminder in their calendar and make sure that it happens. I mean, sometimes it's the little stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's important because there's never a perfect moment, you know? Like, I mean, I've been married for, I don't know, 15 years or something. I could do the math if I stopped to think about it. But let's say 15 years. We've been together for like almost 20, right? So I have an enormous pile of things that I've been frustrated with my wife about, you know, because we've been together for 20 years. Like, and many of them are stupid little things, but like it's really easy to think of the negatives if I choose to go there. But it's not helpful. And, you know, if I wait until even we have a perfect day with no stress or whatever until we have sex, we're going to have way less sex than if we can both be kind of flexible about it and be willing to overlook some things. Now, that obviously doesn't mean selling myself short or having sex with her when I feel like she's behaved really badly or said hurtful things or is insensitive in terms of what she says or does or asks for during our sexual encounters that really makes me uncomfortable, and I've told her it does, but I still don't feel like I can say no. Like, so obviously there's a line to be drawn on some of this in terms of, like, integrity and self-preservation and whatnot. So that's, like, one end of the spectrum. But I think that if you're too perfectionistic waiting for the perfect moment when all the stars align, you're never going to have sex. So there's, like, there's that messy reality somewhere in between of that real world that we live in.
There's also something to be said for really good makeup sex, you know?
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, it's true. You know, it can have a big positive, you know, benefit in terms of getting back on track. So you're not spending more days, you know, kind of angry at each other, which the kids are then picking up on. And, you know, for some couples, it may be, and I'm speculating here, I don't have the data on it, but, you know, maybe for some folks with ADHD, you know, that the distance and the energy that comes from an argument actually can be really sort of sexy in a way, in the sense of it, that then when you come back together, because I think that one of the challenges for a lot of long-term couples is you get so comfortable with each other and so familiar that it feels like there's nothing new and there's nothing unknown about your partner, or there's nothing unknown about your sexuality together. And I think, you know, for folks with ADHD maybe especially, that can be, you know, even more of a buzzkill, because there's that lack of kind of novelty to keep things interesting. So, you know, sometimes a fight, and I'm not advocating fights in order to have great sex, but I don't know, like something, the energy that comes out of a fight can then bring you together in a much more exciting kind of way.
Yeah, no, and what it reminds me of is, you know, when you argue, just like when you have sex, there's that dopamine rush. And so it clears your brain, it helps you to focus. I mean, and if you've had a really busy, intense day, you know, kind of having that emotional intensity, you go, okay, well, shoo, I've let that out. Now I can focus in on my partner. It may not be the healthiest thing in the world, but it definitely can be a powerful thing. There's kind of two things that I'm curious about, because as we're talking about this, I'm sure there's lots of sticking points in this, Ari, but there's two things that stand out really for me. One is managing resentment, because I think that comes up so much in couples generally, and when you've got, if you add ADD in the mix, whether it's your kids or your own or your spouse's, that's a big thing. And then the second part of this is that sex isn't always an easy thing to talk about. I mean, I came from a very different background. You did too, I'm guessing, you know, in your therapeutic world. But not everybody likes to talk about this stuff. You know, we're told that it's just supposed to happen spontaneously, and we're not supposed to have to tell our partners what we want. We're not supposed to tell them that we're dissatisfied, because then that's, you know, going to create a dynamic that we don't want in the relationship. So resentment and communication, it seems to me, are really sticking points in this. Can you talk a little bit about both of those?
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely are. And I think that, you know, as kind of sex-obsessed as our culture is these days, there's still a lot of kind of sex negativity in a lot of these mistaken notions about what is acceptable and what's going to, you know, how are things supposed to work versus how they actually work. So I think that, you know, a lot of this belief that sex should just be spontaneous and we shouldn't talk about it comes out of that sense of shame about sex, you know, that it isn't okay to talk about what turns you on or what you might want to try or what turns you on that you really just want to talk about, but you're not actually interested in trying because you're smart enough to know the reality is not as good as the fantasy, you know? So,
right.
But, you know, like, hell, my wife and I talk about moving to the Bahamas, like, but that's not going to happen, you know? But boy, does it feel good when it's, you know, 10 degrees outside. But I think if you don't know what you want sexually, there's no way your partner is going to figure it out. And if you do know what you want sexually but you feel bad about it, then that's not a winning formula. And if you know what you want but you haven't told your partner, again, they're unlikely to kind of stumble upon it. So I think being able to share with each other what we want out of our sex life in general, as well as in this one encounter right now, I think is really important. And it's part of getting to know each other. And it's in that process of kind of resolving differences and negotiating and finding mutually enjoyable things is part of what I think makes you into a better couple. You know, so you have to do that for all sorts of other topics, but doing it about sex, which feels maybe one of the most personal of all the things that a couple will, you know, deal with. I think it's a way in to feeling more connected and more open with each other. And you know, in order to have a good sex life that continues to stay good over the years requires that ability to be able to have those conversations. And I think that when couples get stuck, it may be that it's because they're not able to have those conversations. And maybe then that needs to be the conversation. You know, I'm having a hard time being sexual with you because I feel like you're too critical or unaccepting about what turns me on, or you always sort of shoot down my ideas, or it needs to be too much your way, or you're too angry with me during the day for me to feel sexual towards you at night, or whatever. But it becomes that kind of the carrot or the motivation to address these other things. That if sex is important to you and you want to have more of it with your partner, then you need to address some of these things. And it kind of reminds me of a quote that I've stolen that I use a lot, which is that the sign of a good relationship is that it pushes you to become a better person. And being able to talk to your partner openly and honestly about sex is one of those ways of becoming a better person, of being more accepting of yourself, being more accepting of your partner, being able to stand up for your needs and desires, being able to tolerate and really empathetically hear your partner's desires, and being able to communicate about them. So, you know, the hope then is that better connection that you get sexually makes it easier to look at your partner less resentfully over other things, give a little bit more benefit of the doubt, pay attention a little bit more to the positive aspects of something rather than just the negatives of it. But it does get hard. I mean, it all gets kind of intertwined. But I think that, you know, the couples that are happy in the long term are the ones who can keep talking and they can keep working on it. And even if they're not batting 1,000 every day, they're continuing to work on it. They continue to feel like at least they're mostly on the same team about things.
Yeah. All right, Kate, does it make sense to share a little bit of the results from the survey? I know some of the folks are already typing in that they participated, and I'm sure we're all curious about kind of what some of the big findings were.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that came out of it, and I'm going to turn it into a book because that's how much there is. But, you know, let's start with a couple things that I found that are completely not what I expected, which I think is awesome because, like, this is why you do research. If it only shows what you already know, then why do you need to do it? So I love the fact that I was dead wrong on a couple of these things. So one of the things was, you know, kind of common advice is that if ADHD makes it harder to pay attention, even maybe during interesting activities, hopefully interesting activities like sex, and it can, you know, ADHD can also affect kind of impulsivity and delay of gratification. Therefore, logically, if medication helps you on those things during other parts of your day, surely it should be helpful during a sexual encounter as well, right? So that was like obvious advice that I would give. And I would have bet $100 or $500 that was going to bear out in what people said in the survey. And that is absolutely not what people said in the survey.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, like 35% of people didn't take meds at all, or the meds weren't working during sexual activity, which if you're having sex at night and you take a stimulant in the morning is probably the case. But of those who remained, most of them, big vast majority, said that medication had very little effect, positive or negative, on sexual encounters. So that advice is not at all helpful, you know, to tell people, you know, maybe the medication is going to be helpful. So that was really interesting to me. The other thing, another sort of thing that I, again, would have bet hundreds of dollars on, which turned out to be not at all the case, was that people with ADHD would enjoy having kind of a larger repertoire of sexual activities, you know, kind of that desire for variety. So having a larger repertoire to choose from during any particular encounter would be more interesting to people with ADHD compared to non, as well as like a variant of that. There was a second question about kind of a desire for novelty, to try new activities rather than just doing the same old things. Again, I would have bet a bunch of money on that. Lo and behold, neither one of those two turned out to be the case. Folks with ADHD have no greater desire for novelty and no greater desire for a large repertoire than people without ADHD. So those are
I'm curious about whether their partners had a different perspective on it, because it's kind of like, if they're, you know, is what I think of as novel different than what they think of as novel, or is, you know, do I notice that the relationship is different when you're on your medication than you do, you know? So it's that sort of stuff. I'm curious whether there was a, did you ask the, I can't remember what the questions were. Did you ask the partners the similar, the parallel question?
Yeah. I mean, I always ask the question, you know, how do you see it? But having said that, you know, I had people with ADHD filling it out and also people without ADHD filling it out. And obviously I had men and women. So basically there were four kinds of people. There were ADHD men, ADHD women, non-ADHD men, non-ADHD women. And I always looked at not just what's the total answer to their question, but also based on ADHD status and gender, because, you know, it's possible if I, you know, let's say I find that there's no difference in terms of, like, the desire for novelty, but, you know, maybe that's because it's averaging out. Maybe women love more variety and men hate more variety, but you average them together and it turns out to be nothing.
Right.
Right. So I always looked at gender and ADHD status to see, am I kind of, you know, losing results because they're averaging out? And it didn't, you know, it didn't especially matter. Like, it didn't change. So the folks, the non-ADHD partners didn't necessarily say that the medication was that much more helpful than the ADHD partners. Although there definitely were some differences in, you know, some places. So so sometimes it really does matter. But, you know, one of the things that I did was I asked about people's current relationship satisfaction and current sexual satisfaction. And generally speaking, those two tend to be fairly well correlated. So if you're happy in one area, you're probably happy in the other. And if you're unhappy in one area, you're probably unhappy in the other. But they're not completely correlated. So there are definitely people who have different amounts of satisfaction in one versus in the other. But I recently had done, I hired a guy to crunch a bunch of stats numbers that go way beyond anything I could understand. And to find out what were the biggest predictors of relationship satisfaction and sexual satisfaction for the, you know, all the people who filled out the survey. And, you know, I suppose the good news is there was nothing terribly surprising in there. But one of the things that, the one thing that was most consistent for, that was consistent for everybody, so regardless of gender, regardless of ADHD status, for everybody, like, the biggest predictor, or one of the bigger predictors, a common predictor, was feeling that your partner is sexually generous. That not only does that predict sexual satisfaction, as one might expect, but it also predicts relationship satisfaction. So if you feel like your partner is sexually generous in bed, you're going to feel better about them outside of bed as well. And I think that this is kind of one little piece of this idea that improving your sexual connection has good benefits in general in terms of the relationship. A couple other things that came out, and this is like totally hot off the presses stuff. Like, I talked to the guy on Monday, and I pulled this stuff out for our conversation today, 3 days later. So, but, you know, another one of the sort of things that predicted somebody's relationship satisfaction was this, the feeling that their partner reads them well and knows how to please them sexually. So in other words, not just do they load the dishwasher without being asked, but, you know, how we feel about our partner overall is partially determined by how we, you know, how they treat us in bed. As well as then also For most folks, except the non-ADHD men, this wasn't a big driver for them, but feeling sexually comfortable with their partner. So feeling comfortable sharing fantasies, feeling comfortable asking for what they want, feeling comfortable with what their partner asks of them sexually. So these sexual things had a big impact on the overall relationship satisfaction. The two other things that came up as kind of biggies here was, number one, feeling that their partner has worked on either their ADHD or their partner's ADHD, depending on who has it. So feeling like the other person has been diligent, has put effort into managing ADHD, whether it's their ADHD, their partner's ADHD. And then, not surprisingly, then based on that, is also the folks who felt that ADHD treatment overall has been effective were more satisfied in terms of their relationship. And in some separate analysis, one of the things that I found was that those who put in more effort and those whose partner put in more effort predictably found treatment to be more effective. So one of the ways of stating this is that working on your ADHD or working on your partner's ADHD is an aphrodisiac. You know, that it helps your sex life. I think because of, you know, those, besides the fact that it shows caring and that effort shows, you know, that you care about your partner and it shows intentionality, I think it also, it reduces some of that daily grind of unmanaged or insufficiently managed ADHD.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ari, I'm going to pause for a second and ask that if you have questions, we're going to have time in just a few minutes to start answering some questions from the group. So let's, if you want to go ahead and type any questions you have in the Q&A box, we'll get to them in just a minute. Ari, I guess the question I want to ask is, you know, was there anything that you there was a few ahas you said, well, I wish, I would have bet that this would have happened, and it didn't. Was there anything else that you want to just highlight that is really important that you really affirmed what you suspected with regard to this study?
One of the things that came out that was really interesting, I wish I could claim credit for having, like, seen this ahead and then gotten it affirmed, but at least I was smart enough to notice it when I saw it. But one of the things that was really interesting is that who in the relationship has ADHD can have a pretty significant impact. So, like, for example, couples where the woman has ADHD and the man doesn't have more sex than the couples where the man has ADHD and the woman doesn't. So also the non-ADHD women tended to rate more things as being barriers to a satisfying sex life and rated those barriers as being bigger barriers than the other three kinds of people did. So I don't know if that, you know, so it's that kind of intersection between ADHD and gender roles and gender expectations. You know, so is it that the women, the non-ADHD women expect more out of their ADHD men than the non-ADHD men expect out of their non-ADHD women? Like, is that what it is? Is it about, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of other kind of factors that go into that. But it's sort of, I had a point where I was going somewhere with this, and now I'm blanking on it. So,
well, part of it is the differences in gender, right? So there's there's social norms about, you know, who should be initiating and how balanced it is. And as much as we'd like to believe that in 2016 that's not the case, it's still the case. Mm-hmm. I think that, part of it is kind of what women find sexually attentive versus what men find sexually attentive. So I know for myself, having a very focused partner and who's paying a great deal of attention to me and really focused on me is something that I value in a sexual relationship. And I'm guessing that it may be harder for an ADHD male to provide that than it is for someone who's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there's lots of different pieces here. And I think that the other piece of it is honestly an ADHD, a non-ADHD woman, I find in my practice, they tend to be the ones that experience more resentment. than the non-ADHD husbands. The non-ADHD husbands have, you know, different roles in the family and that sort of thing. But I find a lot of resentment in the women in the audience. And so
yeah.
You've got more resentment, your satisfaction with your, you just said that the increased resentment leads to increased dissatisfaction. So.
Yeah, and I think also, and I think that this kind of feeds in terms of that, in terms of gender roles, that if I have a guy with ADHD that I'm seeing, there's a decent probability that I have some contact with his wife or the wife comes into sessions or something. If I have a woman with ADHD that I'm seeing, I much less frequently have any contact with the guys, you know? So that bore out in terms of like how non-ADHD men rated their own effort at managing their partner's ADHD, how the ADHD women rated their non-ADHD males' effort towards managing their ADHD, versus the other couple where the man has ADHD. So, the non-ADHD women are much more involved in their husband's or boyfriend's ADHD than the non-ADHD men are.
In their women. That's interesting.
Yeah. And that definitely fit in terms of what I saw in the data in a number of different places.
So one of the questions I got it from a couple people already, Ari, can we switch to questions or do
sure.
you have anything else you wanted? Okay. So the was about increased sex drive, and so that I don't know whether it's a myth or whether this is, but there's at least a couple of people have asked the same question. Is there anything that you found in the data, or maybe someone else's data, that demonstrates that people with ADHD do have stronger sex drives than people who don't?
Actually, that is one of the things that I found is that folks, you know, so I asked how often people were having sex, but also then how often would you like to have sex? The good news is everybody not every single respondent, but across the categories, everybody wanted to have more sex with their partner than they were having. And I asked with your partner, not just with anybody, right? So everybody wants to have more sex, average about between like 2 to 3 times a week. So that is awesome because that means like there's this great untapped potential that we can all then do something with, right? But I think if I remember right, ADHD women did have a higher desire than the non-ADHD women. The ADHD men, yes, also. Also, the ADHD folks, both genders, more interested in pornography and also self-rated as being more kind of adventurous or kinky. Now, of course, that's like self-defined, you know. So for some people, adventurous and kinky means they're having sex with the lights on, you know. But so I don't. Obviously, there's like a little bit of a flaw in the question because I didn't ask them to define, you know, what exactly they were up for. But even there, I think that, you know, in a number of different ways, it did seem that folks with ADHD are a bit more, that they do have a bit of a higher sex drive and are more kind of adventurous about it.
Well, and so, Aria, that brings me to a question that about addictive behavior. And so we know that there's a lot of addictive behaviors in sex. And I guess the question is do you see an increased tendency that goes along with the ADHD need for stimulus? And also kind of what advice would you give to a non-ADHD partner who's kind of dealing and experiencing this?
Sure. Yeah, you know, let me talk about pornography because I think that's kind of like an easy place to go with this. So, you know, there's this sort of chestnut that some people will sort of put out there that, you know, saying that the people who look at porn are looking at porn because they're not happy with their sex life and, you know, and their sex life is bad because they're looking at so much porn, you know. And absolutely that is true for some people. But, you know, overall, when I looked at how much pornography people were looking at relative to their sexual satisfaction, actually it was a pretty, you know, flat relationship. So people who were very happy sexually with their partner also were looking at pornography, just like the people who were very unhappy in their sex life were looking at pornography. So So I think that when it comes to anything, any element of sexual expression, I think you have to look at it within the context of the relationship. So I think that where porn becomes problematic is when it becomes the easy way out. You know, I don't feel like dealing with my wife, or I'm so frustrated with her, or I'm so resentful, or I'm scared to ask for what I want because she's going to, you know, shame me for it, so I'm going to go jerk off with porn instead. You know, obviously that's kind of an easy way out and a problem. But in the same way, for the, you know, partner, and I, you know, again, I mean, this still breaks out on gender roles, that men look at a lot more porn than women do, but some women do indeed look at porn, that, you know, it's easy for the woman in the relationship to take the easy way out of saying, like, I can't compete with those porn stars, and I don't look as good as them, and I don't do the crazy things that they do, and he's just obsessed with porn, and he's addicted to it, so I have no hope of having a, you know, so we'll never have a good sex life. And then they don't have to deal with their spouse or address any of the things that are getting in the way of their sex life. So it's an easy excuse to kind of throw in the towel. So obviously that's going to be a problematic situation. And if that is the dynamic in your relationship, then you guys both together need to address it. I'm not a big fan of the whole sexual addiction model. And a lot of the treatment programs out there are very, very sex negative, and I think far too limiting and ultimately not helpful. But you know, if pornography, whether it's like a big problem or just a little problem, if it's getting in the way of your sex life, if it's getting in the way of your comfort with each other, if it's the easy way out rather than dealing with things, then that needs to be addressed. On the other hand, if it's not a problem, then it's not a problem. And, you know, I'm not necessarily like supporting porn. I'm just saying, what I'm doing is I'm supporting not feeling bad about porn, you know, so don't be insensitive about your porn use, but also don't be hypersensitive about your partner's porn use. And there are certain things that are enjoyed together, and there are certain things that are enjoyed separately. So, you know, maybe porn fits into that in the same way that, you know, certain kinds of food or certain TV shows or movies or whatever fit into that category as well.
Yeah. All right. So we've only got a few minutes here. I want to be sensitive of your time and everyone else's. But can you talk a little bit more about resentment? I think we've gotten a couple of questions about this. And, you know, people want some, you know, suggestions on how to really deal with their own resentment around their partner in the area of sexuality, and also just resentment generally as a non-ADDer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to resentment, I mean, resentment always burns the resentful person more than the recipient of the resentment. You know, whenever we get resentful, we suffer more than the other person. But, man, is there this feeling of strength and power that comes from that bitter resentment. You know, so I understand that temptation. But it's ultimately not helpful. So I think that if you're resentful about something, either you need to address it very directly and very honestly and calmly with your partner, and I say calmly so they don't get defensive, so that you can have actually a productive conversation. But sometimes resentment comes from kind of unreasonable expectations or expectations that are not likely to be met. And sometimes the better thing is to change our expectations for what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. And there's that balancing act. You don't want to be a tyrant and sticking to unreasonable expectations, but you also don't want to be a sellout that, you know, you don't expect anything from your partner. So that's the kind of balancing act. But I think that the more you both understand ADHD and really work on it, hopefully you take some of that out of the equation. You begin to get a better sense of what is reasonable to expect of your partner, what's reasonable for them to expect of you, and how do you work on it together. You know, we all have things in our past that we would have done different. It's that, like, if I only knew then what I know now kind of a thing, and sex absolutely can be one of those areas. So, you know, if there's stuff in your sexual past with your partner that's a problem, work on it, address it, come to some understanding, and as much as you can, without selling yourself short, try to leave it in the past and to go forward in a new way. Because if we're all stuck with our old baggage, you know, it's like you don't go anywhere in life or in your relationship.
Yeah. And get some support for yourself, I think, is the other thing that I would say. Sometimes it's really easy to let resentment just eat you up. It kind of gets back to your comment earlier about focusing on the negative instead of the positive. And I think that sometimes it's not as easy to just say, okay, let's talk about it. And finding someone to support you, whether it's, someone professional or friends or spiritual, counsel, something like that. But just getting some help to manage through resentment, because it can really, it does, you're right, it eats people up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, great. Well, thank you, Ari, for the great conversation. Thank you all for taking an hour today to listen and talk about sex, and for the great questions and participation. And we look forward to what's next. And if you want to go back and listen to the replay again, it'll be available for the next several weeks. And you'll see more about our next event on impactadhd.com. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, you.
Ari. Awesome. Thanks, Ari. Really appreciate your time today.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.